Dennis, how are you?
I'm doing good. Good to talk to you, Jerry.
It's always good to talk to you. Hot day in Roswell, huh?
It's been a little warm. It's up in the upper 90s.
Yeah, it'll cool off pretty much. Roswell's coming up on a nice time to visit in the fall, and we'll talk about that here in a moment.
Yeah.
Do you know this Lieutenant Colonel Richard French?
I don't know French, but you mentioned Mitchell and Richardson, and there was another one prior to them. That was a former congressman from here, Stephen Schiff.
We should have talked about him. He's passed away now, but he really led the New Mexico delegation and the congressional delegation in saying, hey, this is nothing to smile at.
Right.
Something happened, folks.
And there was a report came out. He had gone to the Department of Defense, the FBI, the CIA, most of the agencies in Washington, and they came back and said they had no records, which was the same story we've been getting for all 65 years since it happened. Mitchell, I know personally. I met him on several occasions, the astronaut, and had the chance to talk to him one-on-one. And I absolutely.
I'd like to have been there. I'd like to have seen that happen. What did you guys talk about?
Well, I saw him go outside at a conference we were both at Aztec. And I followed him outside and I said, Dr. Mitchell, I understand you know something about Roswell. And he looked at me and he said, it happened. But he said, that's all I can tell you. He said, but I know from the people that my folks knew, because he's from this area. He was born right just south of Roswell near Artesia. And has family still down there, ranchers. And he said, I talked to enough of these ranchers and my military background, I can tell you it happened. And that was good enough for me coming from Edgar Mitchell.
You moved to Roswell from Texas after you retired from the State Highway Department just because you were so fascinated with the story.
Yeah, I moved up here in 96. I had an interest in ufology in general, and particularly Roswell, since the 80s, I guess, and then when I retired in 96, I had the opportunity to move up here, and I was affiliated with the museum from 96 to 98, and then left the museum and started doing my research as an independent researcher, working with a few other researchers, and I got to meet many of the first-hand witnesses before they passed away. I got to know a lot of the researchers and was able to really get both feet into this and get some serious research done.
Yeah, you and I have known each other for a while now, and it's interesting when we talk about some of the things you're interested in, you actually have a background on underground basis, so we'll touch on that later because you worked for the highway department.
Right.
But let's talk a little bit about Roswell if you want. First of all, we got your new column. It's posted on our website, folks. You go over to Dennis Balthizer. Go over to the UFO researchers lineup, the Gallery of the Stars, I like to call them. There's about 60 or 70 people there. This picture. And they're in alphabetical order, so it'll be easy to find. You'll find Dennis's latest column there, which he has some interesting pictures. You started putting pictures with these things, I noticed, and dressing up your column some time back, and it's looking really good.
Well, thank you. This latest one that I just wrote has to do with something that I've just started doing here in Roswell, and that's giving tours to people, and I think I can give them some insight into the Roswell incident that they may not get in a book or watching a TV documentary, because I take them to many of the locations where things actually happened. Unfortunately, many of the buildings that were here in 47 when the event happened are no longer here, but I can stand there and tell them what was here, what was involved, who was involved, and that gives them some insight. And then, of course, we go down to the old air base, and we go through some of the buildings down there and wind up at Hangar 84, Building 84, where they kept the debris and the bodies before they were shipped out to Ohio.
Yeah, you got a picture there of you, a bunch of people. I think you're in front of Hangar 84 there.
Jerry, that was interesting. Those people in that picture, there are 20 students from London, England, with the Architectural College in England. And once a year, they take a three-month trip somewhere in the world to do some of their research. And this year, they decided to do Southwest United States, which included Roswell, the VLA out of Socorro, the very large array. They went up to Area 51, they were out in Sedona. But they were just absolutely fabulous. They were young kids, college-age students, open minds, lots of questions, and I got the opportunity, I had the opportunity to give a lecture to them at the hotel one night, and then we did the tour the next day. And it was really a rewarding thing for me to see young people with open minds taking this in, and the questions they asked were absolutely wonderful. I just thoroughly enjoyed doing it.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned a couple of things I'd like to respond to. First of all, is the generational thing. I found, and maybe you can back me up, or maybe you disagree. If you do, feel free. I found that the older set of people, like us, and the younger set of people seem to be pretty open to it. It's the people in the middle that I don't think were educated about it.
The younger people are definitely open to it because they grew up to things like Star Wars, Star Trek, the X-Files, and things like that. They had no doubt that extraterrestrials do exist. And the ones that don't believe it, their minds just won't open up. You know, people are raised in a box by their parents, their pastors, their teachers, and stuff like that. And, you know, you and I and several of us have got out of that box. And you have to get out of the box to look at this stuff. When you have the Catholic Church coming out publicly and saying that there's a good chance or a good possibility that there's life out there somewhere, that's a big statement. And for young people, I don't think it's a problem for them because they accept that. The rover polls that are out, different polls that are taken on Americans, somewhere between 65 to 75% of the people that are polled and asked the questions believe that UFOs exist. They believe it's covered up by the government. And those are higher percentages than politicians get elected by. So I think the politicians and the people in Washington, some of the people in the military should start paying attention to the American public.
And the other thing you brought up there that I wanted to respond to is you said you got a chance to do a presentation for this group. I understand you do presentations for any travel group that checks into a hotel or whatever. Is that right?
There's going to be something on my website shortly, probably within the next week, about these tours that I'm doing. And normally they run about 2 hours. And I go through town here, I show them where Jesse Marcel and Walter Hart live. We go by and we look at some of the old West stuff that Roswell is known for, too, like the Pat Garrett statue, the Chisholm statue, and things like that. We go by Ballard Funeral Home, where Glenn Dennis was a mortician. There's a whole lot. There's about 17 different locations that I go to and stop at a lot of them, give some photograph opportunities, and I do about a maximum of three people based on my vehicle. But I also do bus tours, and if people are staying on a bus tour overnight in Roswell, that gives me an opportunity to also do a lecture for them at the hotel, which is working out really well.
Yeah, we wanted people to know about that. And tell people your website right now. They can go over to our place, of course, and link to it. But tell them, they might want to go directly. The name of your website.
www.truthseekeratroswell. That's all one word. truthseekeratroswell.com. My email address is on there. They can contact me, and there will be information about the tours put on the website pretty shortly.
Yeah, and we already have some of that information. We don't want to scoop you on your own website, but we have some of the information up already if they want to go check.
Right.
I noticed on this tour, you do other things. You go by rocket scientist Robert Goddard's workshop. You're going to have to tell me about that.
I don't have time. We have about four museums here. We have the UFO Museum, we have the Art Museum, and the Goddard, Robert Goddard workshop, where his rocketry stuff is all laid out like it was in the original workshop. They have an Anderson Contemporary Museum, and they have a Historical Museum of Southeast New Mexico. So I don't include those in the tour. I go by all of them and show them to the people. But if they have the time, I strongly suggest that they go to at least one or two of the museums while they're in town.
Yeah, now the Goddard deal, he actually lived in Roswell for a while, huh?
Yeah, he was from Massachusetts originally and came down here to Roswell because of the openness we have. He was able to do his testing on his rockets here in the southeast portion of New Mexico. And he is actually the pioneer of our rocketry. He was knew Oppenheimer real well, and he knew Lindbergh real well. And really, he is the father of the United States rocket programs.
Let's talk a little bit about Roswell and how it's changed before we even get to the history of 1947, the crash. There's some things I want to talk to you about, but I think you need to give a flavor of how Roswell was back in 47 and how it is now. And in between there, you've lived there how long?
I moved up here in 96.
Yeah, okay. I'm trying to add that up in my head. That's 12, 13 years or something like that. Well, 15
yeah.
years, 17 years, somewhere. You've lived there more than a decade and a half.
Yeah, yeah.
And Roswell, you know, you mentioned the Goddard facility there, and also later we'll probably bring it up, but in your tour, you even show one of my favorite residential areas there, where
yeah,
the old homes were.
We have a historical district here in town.
They're pretty elegant.
And the architecture is totally different. As you drive down the street, you see every type of architecture there is. Roswell was an old west town originally because the Chisholm Trail went through here. You had people like Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid going through, and the White family had a big house which has become the museum for Southeast New Mexico. But back in 47, when the base was here and really strong, there were probably 3,000 to 4,000 or 5,000 troops here. And one of the things that everybody is amazed with when you drive on to the old base, which is the Air Industrial Center now, is the number of base housing that is out there for the troops that were stationed here. And then a lot of the guys lived in town, too. So at one time, this was a really, really active military base in 1947. And then in 1960s, it was shut down because President Johnson was elected to the presidency, and Southeast New Mexico didn't vote for him, so he decided we didn't need a military base here, and it was closed down. And Roswell had a hard time recovering from that because the city of Roswell and the military base had a very close relationship, and they worked very well together. And when the base closed down and all the troops moved out, it had a devastating effect on Roswell, and it took years for them to rebuild it. Today, we're a town of about 50,000. We're just approaching 50,000 people. The economy is doing good. Housing is doing good, and most businesses have a good business going. So it's on the recovery.
Yeah, you bring people by some of the homes on your tour, your Major Jesse Marcel,
yeah.
Notice, among others. And I guess Colonel Blanchard lived on the base. Did Marcel live on the base?
He did, and we go by there, we stop and look at that. And, you know, Jerry, one of the things I mentioned a lot of times in the tour, I wonder how many of these people that live in these houses, like Colonel Blanchard's house, Walter Holt's house, Jesse Marcel's house, how many of those people that live in those houses know the history of who lived in that house? I really don't know if they know or not.
Yeah, they may not know. They may suddenly understand, why does that guy always bring these people by my house?
That's right. But, you know, at Colonel Blanchard's home, it's not a lavish home, but it's a fairly big ranch-type home. in a cul-de-sac, and I have to think that in 1947, that was a pretty impressive house, probably.
Oh, I'm sure it was. Well, he was commander of the base, and so
yeah, Marcellus.
I'm sure they gave him pretty good digs.
Yeah, Marcellus.
You mentioned Walter Hout. You steered me onto some recordings we used occasionally, and you and Wendy. Her name escapes me up in Albuquerque.
Wendy Connors.
We're involved in getting. So you knew Walter pretty well.
Oh, yeah. I worked with him when I was at the museum as a volunteer from 96 to 98. I saw Walter every day. I saw him, I saw Glenn Dennis, and Max Littell, the three founders of the museum, were there every day. And Walter and I would have a lot of conversations, both about his military life and about his personal life. And he was very, very secretive about what he knew about the incident. For many years, he didn't change his story. He wrote the article under orders of the base commander, Colonel Blanchard, that said, "We have in our possession a flying saucer." That went out on newspapers the afternoon of July 8, 1947, and went out to two radio stations and two newspapers here in town. That headline went out in most newspapers west of Chicago the afternoon of July 8th. The morning of July 9th, General Ramey had covered it up with a weather balloon story, and that went out on the East Coast. But Walter, for years, stayed with his story that all he knew was that he wrote the article. And Wendy Connors and I were listening to Walter being interviewed by a Japanese film crew at the museum, and we heard him say that he had seen a body. Well, Wendy and I went ballistic because we had never heard that before. So we got permission to do an interview with him and put him on tape. Unfortunately, the director of the museum, who was his daughter, told us that we could never use that tape, and we haven't. And we gave copies to the family of Walter so they'd all have copies of an oral history of the man. But he claimed that he did see a body in the hangar, partially covered with a tarp, looked like about a 12-year-old child, large head, long arms, slender body, partially covered, and that was the first time that we had ever heard Walter say anything like that.
Yeah, we managed to be able to use some sound bites out of that anyway.
Yeah.
And do occasionally, and I will be forever thankful to you and Wendy and to others who made that possible. Now, when we talk about the 1947, people probably just can't really picture in their mind how desolate that country was.
Oh, yeah. Let's take the Rancho.
There was a reason they put that bomb, atomic bomb wing there.
Yeah, they had just dropped the bombs from Hiroshima and Nagasaki to end the Second World War, and then the 509th was stationed here. And what amazes me, the 509 was the best we had. They were the best pilots, the best navigators, the best everything. They were hand-selected to handle the atomic bombs. And then they came here, and the incident happened, and we're supposed to believe that the guys that were responsible for handling and delivering the atomic bombs on Japan were too dumb to know the difference between a flying saucer and a weather balloon. And I've always had a problem with that. Colonel Blanchard went on to Europe, and then came over to Washington to the Pentagon, where he was promoted to a four-star general. He was Assistant Joint Chief of Staff and considered for Joint Chief of Staff, the top job in the military, when he had a heart attack in the war room and passed away. Jesse Marcel, Major Marcel, was the intelligence officer. He eventually was promoted to colonel. So both them gentlemen who were heavily involved in the incident were well rewarded in rank by being promoted. And today, the 509th bomb wing still exists. It's in Missouri. It's the B-2 bomber, and it's still our atomic bomb group.
Yeah, you know, when we talk about Roswell 1947 and the story, and I don't know, it's just a story. Maybe you can verify it, that part of that craft was put on a flatbed truck and driven through town at 3 a.m. And people say, why would they do that? Well, there's no other way to get to the base back in those days.
Well,
that was the only road, right?
Yeah, I talked to other researchers that thought that it might have been brought in a back way. There are some dirt roads out there in the desert that it could have been brought in the back way, but I don't see any problem bringing it down Main Street because people would have not thought a thing about it. Because I've talked to Glenn Dennis, a mortician. He had to go out in the desert out here a lot of times and pick up bodies from airplanes that had crashed, and he said it was common to bring those down Main Street on a flatbed truck with a tarp over them. So if they could have brought them, and it was just pieces of a wreckage, it wasn't a craft, he could have brought them down Main Street, and nobody would have paid any attention to it.
A lot of things. I guess the present city hall used to be the police station, is that right?
That's right. It was the police station.
Back in 1947?
Yeah, the sheriff's office is no longer there. It is courtrooms today for the Chavez County courthouses there, and that's where they have the courtrooms, and Sheriff Wilcox's office is gone. I've got pictures of the sheriff's office when I moved up here, but still there, and I got to meet Sheriff Wilcox's two daughters who have passed away since. And they met me there, and they were explaining to me that their mother cooked for the prisoners. Prison was upstairs. The living quarters for the sheriff was downstairs. The prison was upstairs. And their mother cooked for the prisoners, and I told them, I want to go up and see the jail. And I said, would you go up there with me? And they said, no, we don't go up there. And I said, why? She said, our daddy told us that's not a place for young girls to be. And that was 65 years later. So they still didn't want to go up in the jail portion. And, you know, Ballard Funeral Home is still here. It looks just like it did in 1947. Several buildings down at the base are still here and look like they did in 1947 with new paint on them. But other than that, the buildings are the same. The water tower is still down there that was used in 1947. But we've lost a lot of the buildings and a lot of the hospital where the nurse was, where they supposedly took the bodies and did some form of examination. That's been long gone. That was gone before I got here in 96. St. Mary's Hospital, where two nuns saw something fiery go to the ground northwest of Roswell, that's no longer here. But these are things that I explain in the tour that help people have a better understanding of what was here and what took place.
Did I understand you correctly? One time I was talking to you and you told me that the old Roswell Daily Record newspaper was by the UFO Museum or in the same building or close to there or something?
The Roswell Morning Dispatch, which was the morning paper back in 47. The Daily Record was the evening paper. The Morning Dispatch was located in what is now the gift shop at the museum.
Okay.
And the Roswell Daily Record was located in the plaza, which has the Chisholm statue today, of the Chisholm Trail boss, and the Roswell Daily Record and the UFO Museum was located there up until the late 90s. When I moved up here, the museum was there at the corner of, it's about...
What is that, Main Street?
Yeah, across from the courthouse.
Chavez or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there were two well-known buildings there. Schlotsky's Deli was one of the radio stations back in 47. And, you know, there's just a whole lot of history here that's gone because the buildings have been taken down. And what I enjoy doing is being able to share that information with people that do the tour.
I understand. I've talked to some people that have been on the tour you've done, and they were very impressed. So let's talk a little bit of how people can get this tour. You got a tour guide up in Pacific Northwest or an agency or somebody that books you sometimes.
Yeah, Tony Cisneros is the one who got me started on this. He's been doing world tours for about 15 years. He does a Second World War tour in Europe. In fact, I just got an email from him a while ago. He's in Belgium right now, and I never know where he's at when he writes to me. But he's been doing these worldwide tours for about 15 years. And he sent me an email a couple of months ago, and he said he's starting to get a lot of interest in people wanting to do a tour in Roswell about the Roswell incident. Would I be interested? I said, sure, I'd like to try it. So we agreed on that. And on the editorial that's in my on your website, to do one about the giving the public information about the 47 incident, they can contact me directly at my email address, which they can get from my website, truthseeker@roswell.com, or they can contact Tony and go through him. He has a 888 number, a toll-free number.
So they can go either way.
Yeah.
And I like I say, you're coming up actually to, you know, everybody thinks about the summer because that's when the anniversary of that incident happened. But in the fall and the spring, I think Roswell's the best.
Yeah. I've had a good year this year, Jerry. I've done several lectures. I was in Albuquerque, Fort Smith, Arkansas. I did four here in Roswell at the Art Museum for the anniversary in July. And I just got back from Denver. I'm going to be in Sedona, Arizona, September 21st for a MUFON meeting. And then I'm going to be in Abilene, Texas for a Galaxy Ranger Fan Days. And I'm not overly familiar with all the people that are going to be there, but I know that you probably know of Anne Lockhart, the movie actress.
Yes.
She was Sheba in Battlestar Galactica. She'll be there, as well as Bobby Clark, who was one of the monsters in one of the Star Trek movies. So that should be a fun conference. And then the Border Zone Conference is October 19th and 20th. That's in Presidio, right down there on the Mexican border.
Oh, and that's going to be one heck of a conference, by the way.
I think so.
We'll be broadcasting on that Thursday night.
Good.
I don't think I'll be down. I won't be down there, but you guys will be there for a press conference, and we're going to try to get all of you hang around and do a little bit of an interview with. So I guess that's on Wednesday night. No, it's Thursday night. Okay. Anyway, it's what are the dates of that again? 18th or 19th?
October 19th and 20th, and it's
yeah. So it's October 18th, that Thursday night.
Yeah.
And so we'll have you on again during that time for sure.
Okay. Stanton Friedman's going to be there too. He's keynote speaker.
Oh, I know.
Ishmael.
He's going to do one of those, it's a terrific presentation about Are We Alone in the Universe? And he talks about all of that. I mean, if somebody's never heard Stanton Friedman do these things, they need to go.
Yeah, he will. He's good. And then I've already booked Granbury, Texas for next May in 2013. So things are looking good. You know, it's been a busy year, and I've been able to share the research. And that's basically what I want to do. I want to try to get what I know based on the factual information I can get. I want to share that with the public, be it lectures or editorials or radio interviews or things like that. Radio is still my favorite.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the other things that you've covered over the years. Unless you have some breaking news about Roswell I don't know about.
Not right now, I don't.
Never hurt to ask, you know. Somebody might be sitting on something. I know you've been a good friend all these years, so you usually share things with me pretty fast. But
well, we keep being hopeful that we'll get a deathbed confession by somebody, but we're running out of time, Jerry. These guys that were involved, if they're alive, are in their 80s, and it's getting harder and harder to get any information from anybody.
That's true. The Undertaker's winning the battle.
Yes, he is.
That Flight Operations Building, before we leave the subject of Roswell, that's a place where some of the debris was loaded on. That's not Hangar 84. That's on down a little ways by the runway, right?
The bodies were kept at Hangar 84 because that's where Walter Hall said he saw one of them on the floor,
yeah,
covered with a tarp. Now, the operations building, Bob Shirky was in the operations building, and he said troops came out of the operations building with cardboard boxes and had pieces of debris in the boxes and carried them out and loaded them on the airplane on the tarmac. Colonel Blanchard was there with Shirky. I interviewed Shirky several years ago, and he told me that he was actually standing there with the colonel when they were loading some of the stuff up. We've also heard that some of it was taken out to where they loaded the bombs at the southeast corner of the base, and they pulled the B-29s or the cargo planes over the top of these.
Tell people about that. This is a pretty dramatic thing. They had this B-29 down at the end of the runway, and they put these things on loaders or something and brought it down there. Is that right?
Yeah, and I don't know the guy's name offhand, but there was one guy that helped load these things, and he was talking about some of the stuff that he saw in the aircraft after they had it loaded, and was told not to ask any questions about what he was seeing or anything like that. Security was tough, was high. It was really high.
Now, I guess some of that, when you do these tours, some of those things are still there, like that water tower across the street.
I'm of the impression that today the stuff is probably at Area 51 because of better security. Originally, it was taken to Wright Field, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio, which was the logical place to take it because they had cold storage facilities for the bodies. They were doing back engineering from the Second World War and German things they had captured. So that was really the logical place to take the stuff. But I would think that maybe today it would be at Area 51 because of better security. And I really don't think they know what they have yet, Jerry. My theory on Roswell, and it was nothing but debris. It was pieces of something. And if they're back engineering it, I don't think they know to this day, 65 years later, what they have. The propulsion system, the guidance system, how it got here, the motivation for being here, I don't think they know any of that. And it's my opinion that until the military gets the advantage out of that technology, they're not going to go public or admit it happened.
They've still got commercial aircraft stored there in Roswell. Does American Eagle still land there or not?
They have 240 airplanes sitting on one of the runways out here in storage because of our low humidity and warmer temperatures. Most of them are American Airlines, and I can't even begin to think how much money is sitting out there. And I suppose it's 90% because of the economy, but it's unbelievable to see all those airplanes sitting out there. Most of them have the engines covered where they're protected from dirt. Many of them have the windows tinfoil where sun doesn't get in and fade anything. And then they also have several hangars where they're taking airplanes apart and refurbishing the parts and reselling them. Everything.
Well, that's
from,
what they're doing in Building 84 now, right?
Yeah. Everything from a DC-9 to 747s. So I was out there this morning on a tour, and there was a 747 sitting there with no windows, no engines, part of a tail missing. And it's kind of eerie to see all that, but I guess the economy being what it is, there's no choice but to put these things in mothballs.
Does McDonald's still have their flying saucer front?
They do, yeah. And we still have the alien eyes on some of the globes of the street lights, and all the T-shirt shops are still here. They really have capitalized on it. And as a serious researcher, I'm not into that part of it, but I understand that it's good revenue for the city. The museum continues to get about 150,000 people a year. And, you know, if you're coming to Roswell, you're coming for a purpose because we're 200 miles from anywhere. And a lot of people come through here.
And there's some other things that can go on down, the center thing, drive on down to Carlsbad Caverns.
Over Lincoln, where Billy the Kid shot his way out of jail. You got Carlsbad, not too far. You can go out to Socorro, to the very large array, the satellite dishes that are looking for life out in space. There's a lot of, you mentioned up front in the show about New Mexico, and I don't think most of the American people are aware of what all is in New Mexico, because we have the National Lab at Los Alamos, Sandia Lab, we have the VLA, we have White Sands, we have Holloman Air Force Base. There's just a whole lot of military stuff going on here that most people don't know anything about.
And that is probably the reason so much UFO activity was reported to begin with, and why so many crashes.
Yeah, I've got a map that a researcher worked out of sightings in 1947, and just in New Mexico in 47, there were something like 15 or 20 sightings of UFOs back then. So it's not an uncommon thing here. And I'm of the opinion that most of the stuff that people see in the sky, most stuff west of the Mississippi River is probably some of our own stuff, because there's so much room out here to test aircraft and do this type of thing that I think most of what they see probably belongs to us, or at least I hope it does.
But not all of it.
Not all of it.
Let's talk briefly about some of your other areas of expertise.
Well, I got into this basically with the Roswell incident. That was the first thing I really started researching. And then my engineering background with the Texas Highway Department kicked my interest up in underground bases, how they were built, who built them, and for what purpose. And I've done a lot of research on that. Area 51 caught my attention because of the secrecy involved there, and I do lectures on all three of those subjects, Roswell, Area 51, and underground bases. And then in 2001, I was asked to join the advisory board of the Great Pyramids of Giza in Egypt. And at first, I didn't know why they wanted me on the board, but then I found out that some of the board members did believe that there might have been some ET involvement in the building of the pyramids. That has become absolutely fascinating research for me, and probably the most difficult, because in Egypt, tourism is big business. And for me to try to say that the pyramids of Giza, the three pyramids on the Giza Plateau, probably were not built by the Egyptians, that's not going to sell well. But I think the factual information leans towards the fact that the pyramids on Giza and the Sphinx are much older than the Egyptian civilization. I've gone through and done some mathematical calculations on some of this stuff, and it's just absolutely fascinating when you start putting a pencil to it and determine, you know, how some of this stuff could have developed.
So you're still doing a little research and work on the pyramids, too?
I am, and like I said, it's just absolutely fascinating, because those are structures that are actually physically there, unlike UFOs and things like that, which people say they see. But the pyramids are there. We know they're there. We see them. But, you know, when you stop and think, there's 2.5 million stones in the large pyramid, the Great Pyramid. In order for those stones to be set by 20 or 30,000 people, employees, workers, over a 20 or 30 year period, they would have had to set a stone every 90 seconds for 20 or 30 years. It's a mathematical impossibility. And then what you see today is not what the original pyramids looked like. They were covered with a polished limestone. Most of them were taken off by the Arabs to build mosques and temples. The second pyramid, the middle pyramid, still has some of the casing stones on top, but most of the other stones have been removed. You know, the mathematical value of pi, 3.14, was supposedly discovered by the Greeks in the 3rd century. However, when one takes the designed height of the pyramid, 481 feet, it bears the same relationship to the base at 3,023 feet as does the circumference of the circle to its radius. I did the calculations on that, and it came out exactly to the same as the base perimeter. So
wow.
There's, There's also a direct relationship between the dimension of the pyramid and the dimension of the earth using a scale of 1 to 43,200. And that, those are relationships that are not speculation. Those are facts. So, you know, the accuracy on the pyramid base between the longest and shortest site is less than 8 inches, considering the site is 755 feet long. The engineering in these things is just absolutely mind-boggling.
So you didn't work out the way Cecil DeMille did it in the movie with all of the slaves pulling everything away.
No.
There's probably something else going on.
You know, you would think that there would be a reference in the Bible somewhere to the pyramids. I have not been able to find any reference at all in the Bible about the pyramids.
Well, and from you, that comes with a lot of weight because you've been active in the Baptist Church here in Roswell forever.
Yeah. And, you know, Moses was brought up by the Pharaoh and things like that. So, you know, that information should have been there, which tells me that they're older than that. Some people go as far, they have found evidence of water damage on the pyramids up way up inside the pyramids. If that's the case, it may go back to what they describe as the flood, you know, and of course that would predate Egypt also. But everything to me indicates that they're older than the Egyptian civilization. But I'm only talking about the three on Giza, on the plateau. The other 80 or 90 pyramids, I believe, were built by Egyptians, but they're very poor replicas of the three at Giza.
Now let's. I can't let you off the air without talking about Area 51. Why don't you give an overview, real briefly, or something about Area 51? You think it interests our listeners because we have new listeners. You know, I've been doing these UFO shows forever. You've been doing UFO research forever, but not everybody's been up to speed on it.
Well, you know, I don't often do a review on books. But back in January, Annie Jacobson came out with a book on Area 51, and I wasn't going to read it. And then I got to reading some stuff on the Internet about the book, so I decided, well, I'll go ahead and get it. So I got the book, and it really was an excellent book on Area 51. She mentioned names. She talked about different things that have taken place there, the aircraft that have been developed and test flown there. But she made the big mistake of talking about Roswell. And I absolutely destroyed her on Roswell because she didn't have any information correct about Roswell.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Area 51 is located some 60 miles northwest of Las Vegas, Nevada. A lot of people think it's here in New Mexico, but it's up in Nevada next to the atomic test site. And I was up there in 2006 and did a couple lectures at the Little Alien Inn at Rachel. And we went out to both the gates. There's two gates. One of them has a drop-down gate with a guard shack. The other one does not have a gate, and the guard shack is down a quarter mile behind a sand dune. You do not want to cross the border at Area 51. The signs that are posted there about no trespassing say the use of deadly force is authorized, and I believe they mean what they say. When we were out there, the guards were up on a hill, sitting in a pickup in camel uniforms with binoculars watching us. The sensing devices they had, they could listen to what I was saying. They had a camera mounted on a 30-foot pole that followed me when I walked down along the border. And every so often I'd stop and turn. The camera would key in on me, and I'd wave at the guards to harass them a little bit. But if you don't cross it, the guards won't bother you. But if you cross it, they're going to turn you over to the local sheriff. You're going to be interrogated, and you're going to be fined between $5,000 and $6,000, and they will probably know where you're at for the rest of your life. I think the biggest thing going on there today are the new drones. It was opened in 1955 by the Central Intelligence Agency, not by the military, to test the U-2 aircraft. And all airplanes since the U-2 in 1955 have been test flown at Area 51. That includes the A-10, the A-12, the B-1, the B-2, the F-117, the Raptor F-22. All airplanes that are tested nowadays are tested there. And the secrecy of that base is like none other anywhere in the world. I personally think they ought to put signs on the border similar to the signs at Area 51, because nobody goes into Area 51, and maybe if we put signs on the border, Mexican and Canadian border, maybe we could have that problem fixed.
Yeah, you got a good point.
Okay,
so once again, Tony Cisneros and his agency has tours of Roswell, and they can contact you directly as well on your website.
My website is www.truthseeker@roswell.com. My email address is on there. I love that people write to me. I get 100, 150 emails a day. Try to answer those that are good emails. Always like to hear from people that go to the site. And my webmaster recently did a check, and I was amazed to find out that the website, since 98, has had over 5 million hits, which are numbers that are just mind-boggling to me.
Well, yeah, you've had that website for a long time, and we do urge people to go over there.
Thank you.
And we'll look for you at a conference near wherever these people are, the Border Zone Conference in October for sure, and you got some others there. You're going to be in Sedona just before that, right?
September 21st, I'll be in Sedona. Then I come back, and a week later, I'm in Abilene, Texas, and then in October 19th and 20th in Presidio. And if anybody's coming through Roswell and wants a tour, tell them to get a hold of me, and we'll do it.
And your number and everything there, they can find it on that website.
It's all there,
and
yeah.
We have a link to it as well from our website. They just go find your picture and click on it.
I appreciate that.
Thanks very much, Dennis Balthizer. I haven't been able to see you personally in a little while, but maybe we'll run across
you. I wish you the best with everything.
Well, we keep on trucking. Thanks very much, Dennis Balthizer. Appreciate it.
I'm Jerry Pippin. Thanks for listening. Until next time, cheers.
Own the book that has unraveled and shaken the UFO and alien research establishment to its core. Already called An Incredible Book and An Incredible Story by George Norrie of Coast to Coast AM, UFO Highway offers the most explosive look at the most infamous underground base in the world, Dulce. Critically acclaimed author and researcher Anthony F. Sanchez breaks down the secret underground base and gives readers the innermost glimpse of the secretive military-industrial complex and the forbidden alien agenda. Learn how Sanchez explains the origins of humanity with startling proof, detailing how off-world intervention has been the cause for humanity's rapid and exponential growth in technology. As time draws down, are you prepared for the truth? Order this incredible, eye-opening book today at www.ufohighway.com. That's www.ufohighway.com.